Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Everything old is new again here in the Take the Black podcast, the podcast where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. Last week, or 2 weeks ago rather, we told you that co-host Daniel Roman was going on paternity leave. He wouldn't be back for a few months. But lo and behold, somehow I, Dan Selke, am here with Daniel Roman, back in the driver's seat, back in the saddle, riding once again. Daniel, why did you make liars of us?
It's true. I'm sorry, everyone. I am sorry for the deception. All right, it wasn't really deception. Basically just my baby is taking his sweet time getting here. So that means he's not here yet, but I, however, realized today, this was not planned as of like a few hours ago, but I was like, you know what? I am here today. Perhaps we should discuss some dinosaurs and some other fantasy sci-fi stuff. So anyway, yeah, I'm here. Hi, everyone. Hi, Dan. How are you?
Doing pretty good. And hello, everybody. Yeah, hello, Ben Jack. Hello, Julie. Hello, Ash. Hello, Willie Entrekin. Yo, you've chosen a good day, Willie Entrekin, to come here because this is the Take the Black podcast. We're talking about all things sci-fi, fantasy, TV, and books. And we're going to start off. We have things to talk about. We have Jurassic Park World to talk about, which Daniel saw and has strong feelings about. We have the Sandman to talk about, which I saw and have strong feelings about. We have Superman to preview. We haven't seen it, but you know what? I feel like we have. So we can tell you all about that. But first, we are going to stop by Westeros, as is our wont, and go over some quick news breaking from the Seven Kingdoms. Namely, that I know it's stupid. I know it's dumb. I know I shouldn't think this. I know it's foolhardy. I know it's silly. But I've noticed that George R.R. Martin, the author of A Song of Ice and Fire, is booking himself a lot of public appearances lately. He is going to appear on a panel with Brandon Sanderson and several other fantasy author luminaries at August 15th at the World Science Fiction Convention, aka WorldCon. Robin Hobb, Ryan Cahill, Rebecca Roanhorse. And
Brandon Sanderson.
Didn't I say Brandon Sanderson? If I didn't, I'm very sorry.
That dude too. Yeah.
And he'll appear at New York Comic Con in October, one of the biggest cons, period, in the world, in the U.S., next to San Diego. And I just can't help but wonder, Daniel, does the fact that George R. Martin is booking more public appearances, something he's generally eschewed for the past few years in favor of working on a book that will go nameless that is called The Winds of Winter, mean that he has an announcement pending?
I doubt it.
Yeah, me too.
I'll be honest. I am an eternal optimist. George will finish the book. I will one day read it when I am old, or he's extremely old, one or the other. Maybe both. Probably both.
But one of you's already there.
Yes, it's true. I am already pretty old. But yeah, this is one of those instances where I'm like, I don't think there's anything to be gleaned from this. Partially because WorldCon, so we interviewed Martin last year at WorldCon in Glasgow, and he has a long history with this convention. He loves going to it. He's been going to it since before he was published. So it is a, in terms of fandom conventions, it lives very deep in his heart. And this panel is, I do want to talk about the panel because it's pretty cool.
Okay.
Comic-Con, I almost wonder if we're going to get Duncan Agnews at Comic-Con, and that could be why he's going, because we are due for some Duncan Agnews for a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. But yeah, so I doubt we're getting Winds of Winter news, but hey, I'd love to be proven wrong. If George R. R. Martin wants to bring it and slam it down on the desk at New York City Comic-Con, I will be the happiest to be wrong.
The audience would explode and there would be deaths.
There would be riots.
It would be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yes. There, honestly, I would worry for people's safety if it happened.
You shouldn't
people
do it.
People would rush the state. Yeah. So on second thought, George, don't do that. To the comments, Robert Harris, my baby is not here yet. That is why I am here. So thank you for the preemptive congrats on fatherhood. I'm not quite there. Thus why I'm on the podcast today. He's taking his time. So yeah, just like George R. R. Martin.
Baby and George R. R. Martin. Name him George.
What do they have in common? They're taking their time. So yeah, that's the gist with this. It is cool to see him doing public appearances, because in the past he's kind of like you said, he's kind of avoided them during maybe some of his darker periods of work on Winds. And he has been doing a little bit more. For anyone going to, you know, Worldcon or Comic Con, I hope you can catch it. If you aren't, one of the nice things about this, so the Worldcon panel, so it is hosted by SFF Addicts, which is a very good podcast. Basically, these three authors, Adrian Gibson, MJ Kuhn, and Greta Kelly, they interview various science fiction and fantasy authors and talk about their work. They do like craft workshops with them, all sorts of stuff. It is very, very cool. I love that podcast. And essentially they got a panel slot to do a live episode of the podcast at Worldcon. And they were told you can invite whoever you want if you want to have guests. So I assume they worked with Brandon Sanderson to organize this and get all these people on this panel, because Sanderson's company Dragonsteel is filming this whole thing. So whether you go to Worldcon or not, this you can watch this digitally. If you have a digital Worldcon membership, it will be on the digital website, as opposed to the not digital website, because that's a thing. And
the analog, you get a book and you open the website.
You
and
can
read
get a tape of this in the mail from Dragonsteel. It will also be on both Brandon Sanderson and SFF Addict's YouTube channels later on. So I know I'm going to be watching out to see when this pops up, because this is the first time George R. R. Martin and Brandon Sanderson have been on a panel together in like a decade. Like, it's been a long time. So yeah, it's exciting news, even if it's not the Winds of Winter. What do you think about all this? Do you think that you could be reading the Winds of Winter this winter, Dan?
No, I just want to float hope out into the world. Much like some fans are doing. Nice. There is this nice little show before we get to Jurassic Park Rebirth. Jurassic World, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Where a bunch of fans, I'd forgotten about this, from the Pure ASOIAF subreddit. Sometime last year, when Martin wrote a blog post about how rotten his 2023 was, because of things like friends dying, war, the
House of the Dragon.
Slow encroachment of, oh, sure. I was going to say the slow encroachment of fascism in the United States, but House of the Dragon too.
That too. He couldn't catch a break, whatever way he looked.
This is that I'm upset. And then some fans from the subreddit put together this leather bound book of encouraging messages and sent it to him, which is just sweet. How fun. There's art in there from artists who have worked on his works before. There's just encouragement, testimonials, and you know what? Between that and the Wheel of Time fans trying their darndest to roll that boulder up a hill these past couple of months, there have been some impressive fan efforts that remind you how powerful and inspirational fans can be when they act en masse and use their powers for good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to see some love going George's way. You know, like you said, he had a pretty hard year last year. And this is, you know, on the internet, he can't say anything without people crapping on the fact that the Winds of Winter is not here yet. So it's nice to see fans coordinate to send a nice, you know, token of appreciation for this series, which they've all loved so much, without which, you know, you and I would not be here and so many others. The lives would probably look very different. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And
very much.
We know he did receive it because I think someone on the Reddit who was responsible for the mailing of this posted this picture saying, yeah, we got confirmation he got the book. So that's pretty cool.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, Daniel, that's enough feely good time happiness for
positivity.
One podcast. Yeah, let's go negative, as everyone loves to do.
Okay.
A film opened this past weekend in theaters worldwide. The film is called Jurassic World Rebirth. It is the seventh movie in the Jurassic Park franchise.
Indeed.
My history, I saw Jurassic Park years and years and years and years and years ago. I loved it. I thought it was great. I saw the sequel and I said, that about does it for me. And I haven't watched anything since.
Oh, you haven't seen any since then? Okay.
I saw The Lost World. I saw the sequel.
Yeah,
and it was like
counts.
Fine.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love the first one. It's a classic. It's a towering film. It's very important. It's great. It holds up to this day. But no, I was never interested in watching, I don't know, the rest of them really. Jurassic World, when it came by, it just felt like, I didn't see it, but it felt like an attempt to cash in on people's memories of this great movie, this great influential movie. So I just passed.
Mm-hmm.
And you did not, though.
No.
From what I understand, you were hit so hard by the dinosaur bug when you were a youngin' by the first Jurassic Park movie that you have, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you have seen all of these movies, you have opinions on all these movies, and you have seen this latest movie, Jurassic World Rebirth, and you have strong opinions on it. Daniel,
yes,
should this franchise have been frozen in amber and brought back, or should it be
nice.
Allowed to go extinct?
I think it definitely needs to go extinct at this point, honestly, or at least put on ice for a while. So yeah, everything you just said is true, except that I got bit by the dinosaur bug first. I was a dinosaur kid. I wanted to be a paleontologist until I got old enough to find things I was actually going to do. And Jurassic Park was my first ever movie in a movie theater. And I was too small to go see it. And I had to be taken out of the movie theater because the T-Rexes were too scary.
Spooky.
Yeah, it was spooky. It had some genuine scares, that first movie. So, yes, I have seen all of these. I have seen the first three enough times that I basically know them beat for beat.
Oh,
I've seen Jurassic the Jurassic World movies each multiple times. I saw Rebirth over the weekend. I went to see it at the drive-in because my wife is 9 months pregnant and she can't go to the movie theaters because the baby already has ears in there. So yeah, we went to the drive-in to see this, and Robert, so I'm going to read Robert Harris's comment because I think he's on to some stuff here. So he said, saw Rebirth. It was okay, but not great. Too predictable at times. Not enough screen time with our favorite dinosaurs, and not even enough time with the Distortus Rex, which, yes, the Distortus Rex was a thing. Beautiful visuals, though. The Distortus Rex is the mutated monster looking dinosaur that looks like the Rancor. They intentionally made it look like the Rancor from Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Really? Like in universe, it looks like the Rancor, or just looks like the Rancor? The producers wanted it to.
The producers the producers wanted it to look like the Rancor. The scientists weren't like, let's make it look like the Rancor.
Because that would be kind of funny if part of the plot was there are giant dorks on the scientist team who like Star Wars a lot, want to make it look like it. That I would like.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been better, honestly. I mean, I don't know that it would have made for a better movie, but I would have at least laughed about it. No, they were inspired by the design of the Rancor. And they put that in this. So Victor DiGiovanni says, this is a movie you can watch and skip all the non-action parts. And
is that true?
Kind of, honestly. So I have a few issues with Jurassic World Rebirth. I am going to spoil some things. I'll try to keep them kind of light. So my first issue is that this is almost kind of like three different movies that they smush together into one. And because of that, none of them is very good or fully developed. So the A plot of this is Scarlett Johansson and Jonathan Bailey. So she is Zora Bennett. She's a mercenary. She's hired by a pharmaceutical company to go to this island where dinosaurs are to get DNA from the three biggest on land, sea, and air, so that we can make a cure for heart disease. And this pharmaceutical company can make trillions.
Cool.
Jonathan Bailey is their paleontologist. His museum's getting shut down because dinosaurs are real. So what do we need paleontologists for? And he essentially goes on this. It's kind of like a midlife crisis for him, where he does some thrill seeking and steers them through, you know, the different dinosaurs and stuff. So that is the main plot, is let's go to the island. Let's get this DNA from these three big dinosaurs. The B storyline is this family who's sailing around the equator. They get shipwrecked by dinosaurs. The mercenaries pick them up and then force them to go to the island with them. And then they get separated. And it's just like this family and the derpy boyfriend of the eldest daughter just trying to survive, essentially. And then the C plot that the movie just forgets about, basically, is that there are mutated dinosaurs on this island. The movie opens with us seeing, they thought dinosaurs were too boring, so they were making scary made-up creatures out of them instead. And then it went so badly that they left them on this island. And then we basically hardly ever see them throughout the movie. And then at the very end, a few pop up and are scary, and that's the whole movie. So these are, if you took out any one of these plot lines, the rest of the movie would still function fine. This is part of my issue with it. Like if the family, the actors are all good, but like if they were not in the movie, literally nothing would change. Same for the mutated dinosaurs. If they were just regular dinosaurs, it would be the exact same movie. So it's like they had these ideas, but they're so tangentially connected that it doesn't really feel like a coherent movie in that way. Do you want to say anything? Because I just ranted for minutes.
You ranted so hard, your connection went out.
I had opinion.
I haven't seen it. It sounds like what you're describing, like the way they set up something interesting and then didn't follow through on it
at all
in favor of going back to a formula. I think you could point to that and hold it up as an exemplar of something Hollywood seems to do again and again, which is kind of embrace formula over innovation.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I've heard it's okay. Do you think the next movie, as Victor suggests, should be a movie about a bunch of filmmakers make a documentary about dinosaurs, or should the thing just end?
Absolutely. Like, so let me put it this way. I think at this point, the studios have shown enough times that they just don't know what the hell to do with these movies that I think they need to give it a break. Like, that was part of my issue with Rebirth in the first place, was Dominion, which came out like 3 years ago, was marketed as the culmination of the franchise. They brought back Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum, and they were like, this is a big event movie. It's the end of Jurassic World. And then
that was like 8 minutes ago.
It was not long ago. Like, like, it really was not. However, if they do make another movie, I think what Victor's saying is really on point, and that gets to my second issue with this. So Victor said the next movie should just be about a bunch of filmmakers making a documentary about dinosaurs. Then it goes wrong or something.
Found footage, the Blair Witch Park.
That's an interesting idea. But this is one of my big issues with Rebirth. I think it also ties into Dominion and Fallen Kingdom a little bit. And that's that these Jurassic World movies basically go so hard on this idea that people think dinosaurs are boring, and that's why they have to make up all these fake dinosaurs.
Yeah, that is an interesting hook for your big dinosaur movie,
exactly. And like, so I watched The Lost World right after seeing this, and like, by comparison, like, I really like The Lost World, but I get what you mean when you say it was good, but it's not the same level as the original. Yeah. The Lost World is a masterpiece compared to Rebirth and any of the other Jurassic movies after the first one. And it's so fascinating to watch the first two, because so much of the dialogue is like people discussing the traits of dinosaurs. So like, these dinosaurs come on screen and the dialogue is a lot of back and forth science talk, which Michael Crichton, the author of the books, was really, really good at. Like, Michael Crichton would write science facts and you never quite knew if they were real or not, because he did it so convincingly. And the first two movies had that. And like, these ones, like, basically the only thing they say is, that's the biggest dinosaur of blah, blah, blah. That dinosaur is the size of blah, blah. Like, they don't really give you the facts about like the skeletal structure or their behaviors. And like, that's part of what made, and like, this is, I'm a dinosaur kid saying this, but like, I still think it made the dialogue more interesting than just like, people think dinosaurs are boring, so now we're just going to say nothing instead. Like, I don't think that's a good substitute for your dinosaur movie.
I haven't seen that, but it I completely agree with everything you're saying. Although, I gotta ask you, does it upset you, or how do you feel about the fact that this does work on people? Because this movie is a giant hit. It has made $318 million at the global box office in its very first weekend. Daniel, are you saying that the common theater-going public are rubes and that you are so super smart? Or
no.
Is it just that we like what's familiar and we're going to keep going, whether or not you think we should?
Well, I think that's the whole linchpin of what's going on with this series, right? I mean, I bought tickets. I'm certainly not saying anyone was wrong to buy tickets. I think there's something to the spectacle of a Jurassic Park movie that will put butts in seats. I don't think they've totally burned. It's not a Marvel situation where they've done it so much that people don't trust that they won't still see dinosaurs doing cool stuff if they go. You know, like, sure, you'll still have an entertaining time watching a T-Rex try to eat people if you go see one of these movies. But I think they've come a very long way from being excellent movies as well. So like,
sure,
on the one hand, like, I'm not saying people are rubes. I'm not saying anyone's wrong for enjoying this movie. I think as a fairly brainless monster movie, it's fine. Like, I don't think it's bad in that regard. But I think the issue is, when you look back at the first two, they were not brainless movies. Like, they were actually like incredibly well made, like in terms of the writing, in terms of the actors, in terms of the film craft. So this is another issue I have with this. This is the only movie in the entire franchise, I believe, that doesn't have a single puppet in it. So like, the puppets of Jurassic Park were like revolutionary. Like, they built these giant T-Rex heads, and when you see it on screen, it's like, I would be scared to death if that thing was next to me, because it's real and you see it. And there were some shots in this one where it's like, that's a perfect place for a real puppet, and they just didn't do it. Sure. So yeah, I think like Victor said, it's a fun ride in air conditioning.
That's a good line.
No one is going to go and be like, there weren't dinosaurs in that movie. What a letdown. Like, you'll still have an okay time. I still had an okay time. Scarlett Johansson's great. I think the dad of the family is really good. But like, yeah, this movie, it feels like a movie that was made by committee or something. Like, it just is not. Yeah. The inspiration seems really small, because like, this movie was also just like determined to undermine its own tension to the degree where like, so they arrive at this town where they're going to get a helicopter pickup, and it's like, oh yeah, this is our way off the island. And you know, you feel like something could go wrong. 2 minutes before the thing goes wrong that prevents them from getting off, one of the people finds a tunnel and then says very blatantly for the audience, it's a tunnel that leads to a boat. And it's like, okay, well, your helicopter's not going to make it because you just found a tunnel that leads to a boat. This movie has a few times like that where it's like, it's so scared to let the audience be on the edge of their seat for a minute that it totally undercuts its own tension. There's another part where a character falls off a cliff, and I was like, I gasped, because it was this whole tense thing of will he or won't he fall? The rope is fraying. He's taking a huge risk. He falls, and it's like, ah, that's genuinely interesting. He falls in like a puddle and he's fine. So it's like stuff like that where it's like this movie was afraid to like challenge people even the tiniest bit, probably because they want it to be okay for kids, I guess, which is no shade, but sure. Jurassic Park was okay for kids, and it didn't, you know, it was still an immense movie as well. Anyway,
yeah,
I could rant about this a lot, but those are some of my opinions.
I didn't see it, and I kind of didn't see it because I felt everything you're saying would be the case. You can kind of smell when a movie is playing it safe or only out to make money. Doesn't mean it can't be good. Doesn't mean it can't be fun. Doesn't mean you shouldn't see it. But when a movie is, like you said, kind of written by committee, you just sort of feel it. And I get it. I guess studios want to make money. I get studios want to, as Victor said, or Robert said, sell the toys, sell the merch, sell the movies.
Sure.
But it gets to this point where it's like exists to perpetuate itself, and there really isn't a propulsive idea behind the actual main product that lets you at least pretend you're watching some kind of event or piece of art, which is fine.
Yeah.
It seems fine, but I don't think it's going to move me to go see it. But you know what? Maybe the next one will.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, that's the thing. We can bank on there will be another at some point, and maybe they'll do it better. Maybe they'll do it worse. I don't know if this was better than Dominion, honestly. I figured it would be, but I watched them back to back, and I also watched them. So my wife had not seen either of them. She, obviously, the new one's new, but she didn't see Dominion when it came out. She likes these movies too. So it was interesting to watch her have more reactions to Dominion than this movie, because Dominion is similarly like the dinosaurs are just there for people to scream at and then run away, and then like they're like set dressing in Dominion, but it is a slightly more coherent movie, which is insane to say because it's not a great movie. So yeah, there will be more, and I hope, you know, I like Gareth Edwards. It's an interesting thing because Gareth Edwards has made really good movies. And this is just not one of them. It's not like top five of his movies, even close. So
shouldn't poo-poo mass entertainment. Julie took her granddaughter a couple days ago to see How to Train Your Dragon, the remake. They had fun. It was a good time. These movies serve a purpose. And also, I did hear it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I have to ask you, I think Robert brought up a bunch of comments back. Called you Ross, the paleontologist from Friends. So Daniel, quick, no thinking. Favorite friend, go.
I mean, it's got to be Phoebe Buffay, right?
Yeah, me too, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
The funny one.
The funny one. I like Chandler too.
Me too. Those are my top two.
No shade to Ross. You and I. Ross is annoying, but he had a cool job, so he can have that. Those points.
Everyone name your favorite friend while we go into the next segment, which is talking about the new season of The Sandman. Netflix show, an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's comic book that you can't accuse of being cookie cutter because it stays quite true to the comic book. And the comic book is very, very strange. I was a fan of this comic for years. I liked the first season of this show, which is, I always like trying to describe this. It is about a family of eternal, not immortal, there's a difference, eternal anthropomorphic beings who represent different aspects of the human condition, such as death, dream, desire, despair. They all start with D's. No one knows why. You don't need to know why. Our main character is Dream, played by Tom Sturridge there, looking like 2001 My Chemical Romance kind of goth boy. And he's great, by the way. He's incredibly serious in the face and very grand and kind of king-like, egotistical, but in a way that you understand, because if you were the king of everything you ever dreamt and had your own realm, you'd have like a castle in the blink of an eye, you'd have an ego too. The story is so weird, and they did not really water it down for either season. I'll say that. It's hard to describe what it's about. Like, one story, the Sandman, who's Dream, or Morpheus, or the Sandman, or some other names that I can't pronounce because they're in Greek, goes to hell. And he talks to Lucifer, who's played by Gwendolyn Christie, who played Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones. And Lucifer abdicates hell, and she gives Morpheus the key to hell. And then all these other gods want the key to hell. So we got Loki and Odin and chaos and order and some angels down from heaven and some demons and all these other entities who want it. It's all played straightforward. It's very, very close. They don't really stray from the comics. This isn't really a story you could really put your own spin on, because I don't know where you would begin to even try to like insert another fork in this very strange esoteric story. They keep everything, which is, it's almost too literal for me at times. I almost wish they had done a little bit different, but also I can't complain too much, because the fact that this story jumped from page to screen with everything, almost everything weird intact, is pretty impressive and singular, and I don't think it'll happen very often. This is a show that was made in the post Game of Thrones high fantasy hangover, or not high fantasy, sorry, fantasy hangover, that it would never get made outside of a huge appetite for this kind of strangeness. And it's ending early. The second season is the last, despite many more volumes of the comic to go. But I will say, as somebody who's read the comic a couple of times, they're doing a really good job of lifting out the right things so you don't really feel like something's missing, and including the parts that are really important to sort of the central plot line. And half of the season's out, half of the season's coming. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm seeing some mixed reactions to it. It's not really a show that's going to take over anybody's feed, but the folk who like it a lot. And I like it a lot. How about you, Dan? Did you ever watch this one?
Nice. So I'm glad that you've been enjoying it. I forgot that it's only half out. So that's interesting, because I was going to ask you how you felt about, you know, the fact that you're saying they're following it very closely, but they're also ending it this season. And apparently that was their plan before everything came out with Neil Gaiman. They were going to end it with this season. So there's a lot of comic book left, but they're condensing it all down into season two somehow. But I guess we don't really have the answers for how that will work yet, because second half's not out yet.
But at this point I can make a really good guess. Like, I know the comic well enough that what they adapted this first half, I know exactly what they're going to do the second half. Okay. And it should wrap up pretty nicely. I mean, would it have been better if it kind of took its sweet time? Maybe. But there's a lot of stuff in The Sandman that is standalone. There's a ton of standalone stuff in The Sandman comic. And it's a shame to lose so much of it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it is standalone stuff. And it doesn't hurt it overly. This was wrapped up because of the post Game of Thrones hangover ended. That's why this show isn't in early.
It's because
the appetite, same reason with the Time Wars candle, same reason a lot of this stuff happens, because people started to realize, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't sink kajillions of dollars into esoteric fantasy stories, maybe that really was a more isolated phenomenon, and we don't get to recapture the magic of Game of Thrones just because we chose a fantasy thing to make.
Yeah, I definitely think studios are realizing that, and that makes sense about there being lots of stand, like the Sandman is a comic in the truest sense. Like, it's not just one, you know, overarching story split up into graphic novel installments, even though they made omnibuses of it. Like,
yeah,
they were weekly or monthly or whatever, they probably monthly comics.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how you end up with an issue all about cats and what they dream and stuff like that.
Which they did so, in depth. I like that.
Yeah, I liked the cat episode too. So, to answer your question, to come back around to it, I have not watched season two. I don't think I'm going to watch season two. Maybe at some point, but honestly, like for me, the shadow of Neil Gaiman, who like so Neil Gaiman, the person who wrote the comics, came out last year that he was accused by multiple women of sexual abuse, like, and he's currently suing some of them, like, so it is a big messy situation. And but, you know, New York Magazine did a really exposing article on this that really painted Gaiman in a very bad light from like multiple women. And a lot of other networks have pulled plugs on adaptations of his work they were making. Like Disney was going to do the Graveyard Book. They decided not to. Good Omens, which he was like actively working on, they scrapped the third season. Then they were going to do a movie of the third season, and now I don't know what they're doing. So the I'm glad that the Sandman is getting a proper ending, because, you know, a lot of people have a lot of attachment to this comic. The casting was really good. The production was
really good.
It's about, it seems like the adaptation people have been waiting for of this comic, but I just don't know. So I don't have that attachment, and I don't know if I can bring myself to get over the Neil Gaiman hurdle, especially knowing that he's, you know, actively pursuing litigation against people in his abuse cases. And like, does he get money from this? He must.
He probably does. I have thoughts on that. First, I'm gonna read some through some comments,
because
we got a lot of good comments here. I wonder if I'll get canceled. We'll see. Okay. but first, your comments, a lot of good comments here. Julie's favorite friend, Rachel. Legitimate. Mm-hmm. Victor, what a fun movie the Friends group would going to be in Island with Ross and things go bad. That should be the next Jurassic Park movie. Forget the documentary thing. The Friends go to Dinosaur Island.
I could totally get. Well, didn't Chandler die? But aside from that, I would watch AI. Oh, Dan.
On to the Sandman comments. And yeah, I do see a lot of you guys saying, like Ash says, I was watching Sandman season two. I had to pause it to come watch it. Oh, thank you so much. That's so nice. I love it too. Good. I'm glad I got some people in our corner. Julie watched three episodes, got a bit confused, went back to watch season one, tried to remember what was going on. I've nearly finished, so we'll go back and start season two again. Yeah, keep it on. It is willfully, like, again, it doesn't really water down anything, which can be a problem, because the Sandman's weird. Like, it's very esoteric. It's very strange. It's very conceptual. The most conceptual. And I have seen people say, like, I don't get what's going on. I think someone else said here that's a victim of the long wait, which, yeah, everything is. We still haven't solved that problem. Someone can get on it anytime. That'd be great. Let's see. That was Victor, yeah. We'll talk about Neil Druckmann, sure. Robert Harris, go for that. I think we talked about it last week, actually. We'll talk about it for you. As for the shadow of Neil Gaiman, which Victor points out, they have the titles of all of Neil Gaiman's works foreshadow what would happen to the adaptations. I'll look into that later. But okay. So I do. I have not. I'll admit. I have not really watched it. Feeling, I don't know, guilty or probably not the way I whoops been like Harry Potter. I do think this is a case by case basis kind of thing. Like Neil Gaiman's work, it's gone. It's going down. I mean, I don't know if he became like a J.K. Rowling, where he was this immensely powerful person of huge wealth that was making money and being courted by major studios and then using that money to suppress the rights of marginalized groups. Perhaps I feel differently. I feel like this is it, though. This is about it. Like, after this, I don't see Neil Gaiman adaptations really going anywhere. for a long time, if ever. And yeah, I do think the story has never been told, other than some Harry Potter, and I do think it's a good story. So yeah, I have seen some folk. I mean, I understand. I've seen some articles about that. Like a lot of the reviews kind of made it about like it can't escape the shadow of Neil Gaiman. And I'll be honest, like yeah, it can. Like I'm watching it and I'm liking the story and liking the characters and the casting and everything and the effects and the themes. Except for the fact that Dream kind of looks like I think what Neil Gaiman wishes he looked like. I don't really think about it that much at all.
Not wishes he looked like. Have you seen pictures of him from the 90s? Like, so this is part of why I've seen, I think Alex Zalbin, who used to be one of our colleagues, he writes for, I think, Comic Book Club. He wrote a really, really good editorial about this because, like, yeah, Dream is the closest thing Neil Gaiman has ever put to a Neil Gaiman insert in one of his stories. Like, he dressed and looked just like that in the 90s, and like the shadow thing is interesting because I don't know how deeply you dug into all of the allegations and stuff.
I'm aware of all of them. I mean, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're writing about him here.
Yeah, so like, you know, I've seen a lot of people talk about the episode from last season. I think it was the second half of the bonus episode. Where is it, Calliope?
Ooh, yeah, Calliope. The muse.
There's a story. Yeah, so there's a story where Dream finds that a writer has trapped a muse and is trigger warning here is raping this muse for inspiration, and Dream punishes this person by giving them too many ideas they can never get any down. I think right, he frees the muse who is his ex. And essentially what a lot of people have come around to is it's hard to look at that the same way, knowing Neil Gaiman was doing heinous stuff to women in real life. Like, is he the, you know, viewing himself as the heroic Dream coming in and helping when in reality, his actions in real life align more closely to the person doing awful stuff in that story. So I think with separating art from the artist, aside from like the J.K. Rowling, like you said, like you're getting a lot of money, you're using it to attack a marginalized group. In this case, like he is using money to pursue the women who came out against him. Like that is a fact. I don't know how much Sandman matters for that because he's already pretty rich. But I think for me, some of it is like when you can't help but see reflections of the awful real life stuff the person did in the work. That's when I usually draw the line. Like Marion Zimmer Bradley is another one of these for me. Like she, I can't remember if we've ever talked about this, but like
you probably have.
She and her husband like sexually abused their kids. Like it was pretty awful. And like when you read her work, there's a lot of very weird and very uncomfortable sexual material in it. And it does not read the same way once you know about the things she did. And I wonder if Sandman is going to feel that way. That's kind of the impression I've gotten, but I'm happy for you and for the people who've watched that it hasn't felt that way yet. Is what it sounds.
I
mean,
that particular story, I'm glad I watched that episode or read that before I learned about Neil Gaiman's accusations. It does depend on like a meta knowledge of what happens beyond the book, though. Like if you just enjoyed the show or the comic and didn't know things about the author, because why would you? Because Neil Gaiman is not a person, it's not like, I guess he's close to like a John Grisham, J.K. Rowling. He's not an faceless author, but he's not a household name either. And I will say this season, happily, nothing has really triggered that. But I'll admit, yeah, that particular story is pretty rough.
Yeah, so I'm curious about the back half of the season and where that all goes. And you're right, obviously, this is, you know, it does, there's a certain amount of knowing the personal business of the creator that matters there or doesn't matter. You know, people who are just watching Netflix shows and come across it probably won't know this stuff. A lot of people who've read the comics are aware of it because Neil Gaiman is one of those authors where people were fans of him. It wasn't like, you know, George R. R. Martin has a lot of fans who are like Game of Thrones fans, but like they won't touch anything else he does. Like Neil Gaiman kind of, he was the other end of the spectrum where it's like his fans would kind of give most things he wrote a try.
Right.
But yeah, for the general, you know, show watching public, this may not be emotions they have to wrangle with. And perhaps that's not a bad thing, because all the cast, the crew, everyone working on this show put a lot into it. So I'm glad
I do think it matters that it's a much smaller show than, I don't know, something comparable. As Ash says, I think can enjoy art without enjoying the artist. But yeah, I can see that the people might want to back away from working with him if they feel his name is tainted, which they do. And it is. And I think they have. Like, I think this is probably the last Neil Gaiman adaptation we'll see, unless that Good Omens thing comes out.
I think that's true. Yeah.
Victor's great. Victor, do you like
Victor's on fire today in the comments?
You do open mic nights. I actually want to know, because you're always with the zingers. Gaiman has been meeting with a new member of the Endless Deposition.
Nice. Yeah. So that's all very fair. I'm glad you've been enjoying it. I'm curious to see what people feel about this, you know, moving forward. And, you know, like Ash said, I think you can enjoy art without enjoying the artist. That everyone has to draw their own line with that. And
honestly,
you know,
my thought about what they'll feel to this is probably not a whole lot. I think the second season will end and it'll probably be forgotten pretty quickly, but yeah, it'll be there for the big fans.
Netflix is not even doing as much. Like, I did notice that during To Doom, the Netflix event, like, this was one of the few shows coming out in the coming months. Like, they didn't mention at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not hard to guess why.
Yeah, so I think they are content to let it quietly come out and be forgotten. And I do think that's probably what will happen.
Yeah. Let's go on to the next section of our outline.
Yeah.
What are we watching? You know what? I feel like we had the appetizer with George R. R. Martin. We had our meal with Jurassic World and The Sandman. And now we get to enjoy the eighth member of the Endless, dessert. With nice. What are we watching? What are we reading? Anyway, Murderbot's almost done. That's been fun.
I loved it. I
have come around to that show. It's been a nice journey. And I'm looking forward to the finale on Friday. I've enjoyed that sci-fi show on Apple TV Plus. It's been fun. I've liked it.
The finale, I have seen the finale. I really enjoyed it. Dan, don't read my review. Watch it.
I already did.
No. I already did this morning. Okay. Okay, fair.
Dude,
well,
come on.
I also have been watching Murderbot, obviously. I think it ends on a strong note. And I am hopeful Apple will give it more seasons because, you know, that's what Apple does. They can't change now. Not when Murderbot needs it. But yeah, I'm glad you've come around to it and you've been enjoying it.
Yeah, I got into the nice rhythm. For Murderbot to be more robotic or something, like more contrast between like the normal and the bizarre. Instead, he kind of feels like a slightly off-center normal guy rather than like a robot who is coming into his own. But I've gotten used to it and I like it. And I really like that penultimate episode. And I felt something when he crash landed and went out for Crash for Failure. By the way, Julie, I'm also watching The Gilded Age. That is my favorite guilty pleasure. I love the gowns. I love the sets. I love the pointless, silly rich people problems where they're all exploiting their workers. But we must be concerned about whether or not you go to marry the Duke. I like it. I like it a lot, even though I feel bad if I think about it. I don't feel bad while I watch it. Much like The Sandman. So yeah. The Gilded Age, I'm all about, even though it's such a stupid show in some ways, but also a really enjoyably stupid show.
Nice. It's the definition of a guilty pleasure, essentially.
Yeah.
The Gilded Age.
I had never had a guilty pleasure. I'm always like, I don't think they exist. And then I'm like, no, they're real. And they're called The Gilded Age.
Yeah. What have I been watching? So I started Monarch Legacy of Monsters on Apple. And honestly, it's been better than I expected. It's been pretty decent. So this is not really too much of a spoiler. It's like one of the first scenes. So it has Anna Sawai from Shogun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's great in it. It's got Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell play the same character, but like one plays him as a young man in flashbacks and one plays him in the present. Kurt Russell as an older man. It's very interesting to watch, you know, that's some top tier casting there, like this father and son who are both great actors. It doesn't really feel like nepotism in the traditional way where it's like, he just got it because it's his son. Like Wyatt Russell has a few big roles under his belt. And like, they're both like definitely pulling their weight in this show.
Sure.
But Anna Sawai's character finds out very early on that her father had a pretty big secret, which is another family in a different country. Yeah,
no
that's
way.
that's her first scene. So I'm not going too deep into spoilers, but it's been better than I expected, like honestly. So I've been enjoying that. I'm like 3 or 4 episodes in. Victor said the same thing. Better than expected, Monarch. What else? I've been watching Jurassic Park movies, obviously. Murderbot.
Are you going to watch Superman this weekend? The Superman movie?
Probably not, because I'm down to the wire here.
Yeah.
My baby could come anytime, so I can't bank on going to the movies. We're lucky that we got to see Jurassic World. Fortunately, life has been on a monster movie kick here at this late portion of the pregnancy, so we've made some time for Jurassic Park. The only other thing I'm about to get into that I'm super excited about, this came in the mail today, this book Kasthan Gane by Essa Hansen. Cool. So this is a novella in her Graven series, which is what's the first book called? Nofek Gloss. This is a new book that Grimdark Magazine is putting out in July.
Good name.
This month. Wow. Yeah, that's this month. And it's basically like almost like Delicious in Dungeon, but set in her very, very imaginative, like sci-fi space opera universe where there are like bubble universes and each one has different physics and different flora and fauna. And basically this book is about a person who wants to like cook things from different universes who ends up stranded on this planet and has to try to get off in this race, like amazing race against like 15 other people who were captured, and cooks things along the way. So cool. I'm really looking forward to this book, Kasthan Gane. Had to shout it out.
Is that like a new subgenre? Because you're right. Delicious in Dungeon, this thing. Is there going to be a whole mashed together cooking with sci-fi fantasy?
They're definitely
into it.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is.
Can we name it?
What's the other one? There's another one, 7 Recipes for Revolution, I think, that just came out last year, by Ryan Rose. Yeah, that came out. Oh, that comes out this month too. Who knew? So yeah, it definitely is like a catching on subgenre. Wait. But yeah, what is it? Culinary fantasy? I don't know.
Oh, that's a good one. I like Julie's comment. You better read when you can, Daniel, because we won't have much time once George is born.
That's what you think, Julie. I'm like, yes, this child is going to be a potato for a month. I am just going to sit and read while it's sleeping.
Yeah, that's how it'll go.
That's definitely how it goes. I'm like so overconfident. It's a problem. I'm like, because my sleep schedule is garbage already. Pumped, so I'm like, yes, I'm ready for the insomnia that I already have, except worse. Bring it on, child.
It's not going to be a change.
No, not at all. But yeah, that's what I've been getting into lately. You got anything else on your plate? Are you going to go see Superman?
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Nice.
Victor already saw it. I hear it's good.
Wow.
We'll definitely cover it next weekend or next week here in the podcast. And by the way, whoever asked, the seafood thing we teased, what was Squid Game last week? Yes, we saw that early. As Julie says, that's what you think. Good luck with that. Sure, it's fine.
Thank you.
I'm sure you have a name picked out. I think it'd be hilarious if you named your kid George. And I know that hilarious is the main criteria in picking baby names.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
I'm sure you've thought about that.
That's definitely the thing you want a child to feel for the rest of its life, that it's that the parents pick the name because it's hilarious. We do have a name. His name is not George, alas.
Gotcha. Well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, let's move on to the WIC News Lightning Round for the last time for Daniel for quite a while.
Yes.
Where we go through a bunch of stories we didn't have time to get to in the main body of the show and hit them with our 20-second takes. I did order these. Although, how? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Daniel. Okay. Your odds. Daniel.
Yes.
Amazon eyes WandaVision showrunner Jack Schaefer to manage its fourth wing TV series.
Jury's out, man. Jury's out. I mean, I hope it's good. Fourth Wing is a Dragon Rider romantic fantasy. It has lots of fans. It seems like Amazon wants to make it because it has lots of fans. We will see if it's any good. But Jack Schaefer tends to be pretty solid, so probably won't be bad. But in our era of corporate fantasy TV, who can tell? Dan, I didn't know this. Okay, so the trailer for Christopher Nolan's new movie The Odyssey, apparently it leaked online.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, wink wink. And it looks like a Christopher Nolan movie. It looks very serious. It looks grim, kind of a grand. Tom Holland was in it a bunch as Odysseus's son, and I shouldn't describe any more or else I'll get sued. But
It's definitely not a story anyone has ever heard before, The Odyssey. Don't get spoilers.
You say it sarcastically, but never mind. Okay, moving on.
Ooh, okay.
Daniel.
Yes.
The Boys wraps filming on its fifth and final season.
Huzzah! I'm glad The Boys is getting to end its run on its own terms in a solid way. I'm sure it will not be at all prescient to what we are going through politically in the United States at this current moment. Definitely won't be timely. Definitely won't upset anyone. I expect it to be a pretty calm fifth season. All right. Dan, speaking of Hollywood doing corporate Hollywood making choices. So MGM is apparently developing a third Spaceballs movie along with the sequel. Is this true? That's
according to rumor, but I needed an eighth one, so I put it on there. Again, I said before, I love Spaceballs, this Star Wars parody movie from Mel Brooks. It was my first movie experiences ever on like videotape way back in the day. And I love that they're making a new one. I mean, you know what? To make an effective Star Wars parody, maybe it should be overwrought and too many movies and a big cinematic universe that is just disastrously huge clips in itself. That is the only way to parody modern day Star Wars. So maybe Spaceballs is doing it right.
Okay, touche. So before you ask me your next one, I'm just going to put this out here for consideration in case we can make it work here anywhere. Robert Harris said, need Daniel's take on The Last of Us losing Druckmann. Down to continue with what we're about to do. I don't know if we can squeeze that in anywhere. That sounds good. Sounds good.
Number nine. Okay, Daniel. Apple starts work on its Neuromancer show based on William Gibson's cyberpunk classic.
Apple, out of all of these streaming services, Apple has the best eye for choosing the things in their niche.
Really good.
Neuromancer is a great, great choice and fit for them. It's like one of the iconic classic original cyberpunk novels, that and Snow Crash. William Gibson, that's great. I hope it goes well. I hope they do a good adaptation. It's a perfect fit for them. Here's another thing that started filming. Dune Part 3. Cameras are rolling.
Woo! I think it's great. Dune Part 3, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
Apparently, Timothy Chalamet may have like shaved his head for it. So, bald Paul Atreides. That's just a supposition from photos, though. I can't be sure of that. Yeah, I want it. I want it now. I want it as soon as possible. Dune. Now, that is a big franchise that is actually working. So, how many of those we possibly can get? Daniel, you're like a metalhead guy, right? So I wanted you to have this.
I am.
Here's Jason Momoa in the mosh pit at Black Sabbath's final gig very recently. I think over this weekend, some festival.
Yeah, I believe it was over the past weekend in Birmingham, England. That's right. That's right. I love that for Jason Momoa that he was able to be there. And for all the other people who were there, like, what a... That's a life event. And yeah, of course it fits. Like, I am 0% surprised that that dude likes Black Sabbath, aka that he has good taste. So that's awesome. Hope he had a rad time. Dan, so this is cool. The real life direwolves, in quotes for the people who care about the quotes, Romulus and Remus, they have now doubled in size. They're around 90 pounds each, which is 20% bigger than normal gray wolves.
You know, you're saying that it's unrealistic or not very exciting for have a Jurassic World movie where dinosaurs is boring. But you know what? Wolves are boring. Let's engineer new wolves that are 20% bigger and huger, and their teeth the size of bayonets. And they're going to break free of the enclosure and live on an island. And we're going to go to them over and over and over and never learn our lesson.
That sounds like, yeah, that sounds completely accurate. I would believe you if you told me that was one of the movies.
Bonus thing number 9, Daniel, Neil Druckmann has left The Last of Us show, leaving Craig Mazin to do seasons 3, 4, whatever, solo.
Yeah, presumably seasons 3 and 4. I am not too worried about this, largely because Craig Mazin has been so in sync with Neil Druckmann. He is a huge fan of the franchise, so it's not just like they had a TV guy and the guy who knew the story. Like, they both love this thing. Yeah. And I'm sure there's still going to be plenty of touch about the show. Like, it's not like Neil Druckmann's going into exile or anything. So they left the guy who knows how to make really good TV in charge. I can get behind that.
All right. Yeah. A sanguine take from Daniel Roman on The Last of Us news.
There we go.
The last sanguine take we'll have for a while, because one assumes next week we will have a new co-host. We'll rotate through them. As you raise little Not George, I hope you and your wife Not George are very happy.
Thank you. Thank you.
In the meanwhile, subscribe to us wherever you can subscribe to podcasts. Look it up, our YouTube channel, our Facebook page, Apple Music, all those places. Wherever podcasts are, we are as well. And join us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST for another live episode. We talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movie, TV, etc. You never know. And you never know who's going to show up. You know what we're going to talk about. It's exciting and brilliant every single time. And I'm just so happy you get to watch us. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Daniel, best of luck. And we'll see when we see you. Have a wonderful adventure.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Take care, all. I'm glad I got to come see you guys one more time. And yeah, I'll see you on the other side in a while.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Our sister, I'm going to bring forward and yours and give it to you now. And he said, oh, wow, that's great. Thank you. That's so generous of you, Carl. That's great. But his wife, my sister-in-law, went ballistic. She said, this is too much money. This is wrong. I don't want anything to do with it, and stormed out of the room. And I thought, well, that's not what I expected. Oh, my God. So I realized from that this was not an easy thing to do. So I learned a lesson from that, and I knew that I had to do this authentically. I had to do it right. Otherwise, it was not going to work. So that happened. And then the third thing that happened was that I was looking at my financial statements, and I had more money there than I was really using. It was sitting there. I mean, it was growing, making profits and so forth, but it wasn't being used. I wasn't using it for me. I wasn't using it for things that I really cared about, not for my people. So I thought, well, if I have all this money now, why should I wait until I die? Why don't I bring it forward? And then, you know, it was a long process for me to come around to that, but that's what finally started this. And I said, well, I'll do it now.
Let's back up just a bit. Tell us a little bit about your new book. What is The Happiness Experiment?
Well, this is a recording of the real events with real people who I decided that I would bring forward the inheritance, the money I had for them in my will, and made it a prequest. So it was a chunk of money that they were going to get while they were still young enough to enjoy it, and I was still alive to see it happening. So I saw what they were doing. So when I sat down with them, I talked about money and happiness and how one can connect. And I said, look, I'm going to bring this forward to and give it to you. But what I want from you is a plan so that you use this money. So it's really a big benefit for you. I don't want this to overwhelm you. And they said, what kind of plan? I said, I want a happiness plan. And they said, a happiness plan? What's that? So you know, nobody has seems to have a happiness plan. But it's one of the most important plans you can get. And it doesn't have to be a very complex. What is it that makes you happy? What values do you want to pursue? You know, what goals and dreams do you have? And you can pursue them. And so I got them to write a happiness plan. And then when I saw the plan, I gave them all the money all at one time. And so then they took it and I watched them with their plan. I saw all their plans, what they did and how they became happier. And so, you know, that had to be written about. So, because I wanted other people to see what they did so that they too could do the same thing.
Which PreQuest is the most unique one you've come across?
Well, it was a very, very painful and sad story because two dear friends of mine had a beloved daughter and she was hit head on by a drunk driver and killed. She happened to be 8 months pregnant at the time, so that killed the granddaughter too, and also their daughter. They were totally, totally wiped out, devastated, and they died emotionally. They had decided that they could never be happy again, that it would be wrong to be happy. They didn't deserve to be happy because their darling daughter had been killed. Tremendously painful, awful, awful story. So they were grieving 6 years later. And I met with them and I told them how much they had added to my life and how much I was so grateful to them and that I wanted to express the gratitude. And I put them in my will and they could accept that. And I said, but I want you to have it now. And they said, oh, no, we can't accept it. They turned it down. They turned it down. Well, we worked. I said, look, I'm leaving it open. So several months later, I think his wife persuaded him to do it, actually, you know. And, you know, so they said, okay, we'll do it because if we're going to wait until you die, why not do it now? And they did it. And it wasn't the money, interestingly enough. They said it was the coaching that made the big difference. That changed their mind. Their mindset from being so negative, you know, we'll never be happy again. We don't deserve to be happy. And the coach turned their thinking, their mindset around and said, look, you know, it can be, you can be happy again. And they started to get the mindset of happy people. And now you cannot believe what these people, they're traveling all over the world. They're in Tahiti right now. They climbed Kilimanjaro. These people are loving life. And it was a major change. That is one of the most heartfelt, wonderful results of the and in a sense, she said, the wife said, this PreQuest changed, saved my life. Because we were no longer living. We were dead. And this brought us back to life.
Yeah, I mean, dealing with grief, and many of us have, I have, you know, when you're in those depths, it can be really difficult to find your way out of it. And, you know, often it looks like there isn't a way out of it. And, you know, sometimes you want a map, right? And it looks like this concept could be a good map for you if you're that. It sounds like it was for these folks. I always like to end interviews by asking, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have?
How can my listeners benefit from this book? What should they do? What would be good for them? And so I'll answer that question. First off, think about happiness. Think about being happiness. Do you deserve to be happy? And you can be happy, but you have to make it as a choice. I'm going to increase my happiness. Just that, if you make that realistically, I want to, and I'm going to increase my happiness, that choice. And then talk to people about it. Talk to a husband, a wife, or a girlfriend, or a friend, a therapist, or coach. Talk to somebody about it and say, look, I'm making the decision that I want to be happier, and I'd like you to help me create a happiness plan. And then work on it. And it's not that hard, but it is challenging, but it's a wonderful exercise. And if they do it, I guarantee they will increase their happiness. I guarantee it.
Carl Barney is the author, and the book is called The Happiness Experiment, A Revolutionary Way to Increase Happiness. Carl, where can people find the book?
Wherever books are sold, and it's now available for pre-order from Amazon, and they can go to thehappinessexperiment.com, and they can pre-order it there, and I hope they will.
Carl, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's been fun.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.